I think Don Scheel was one of those early guys that yes. came right around in there.
Yes, he was.
And yep.
Anyway, it's what's the day? January
16th
or February? February 16th. And 2015, we're talking to Dave DeLurie. And Dave, maybe we could get going with, you could give us a little summary of, let's go back to when you were in college and proceed from there as far as how you connected on to Western Dubuque.
Okay. Well, I graduated in 62 from Loras, and I was looking for a teaching job. And all of a sudden, one night, I got a telephone call from a priest in Pueblo, Colorado, Father Joe Baer. And he said, would you be interested in coming out to Pueblo? I knew absolutely nothing about Pueblo. As far as I know, you know, it was still inhabited by Native Americans. I mean, so I said, okay, give me a while to think about this. So I called him back, and I said, yeah, okay, I'll go. I'll come out, and I'll teach history and whatever else they needed me for. So he asked me, well, do you have anybody that teaches English? Do you know anybody that teaches? So I said, oh, yeah, I've got a good friend, Jim Slowinski from Chicago. He's a good basketball coach. And so, okay, so he got in touch with him. And so we went out, and I taught 6 years in Pueblo at the Pueblo Catholic High School.
Okay.
I got married. My parents were aging at that point. And I thought, well, you know, I want to raise a family, and I want to make sure my parents are well taken care of. So I started kind of looking around in this area. And while I was going to graduate school at Loras, I would bump into guys like Tom Wickham and Al Eid, and they were telling me about Western Dubuque and how well they liked it out there. So I wrote Ralph Buckman a letter, and I said, if you have any teaching jobs, I would be interested. I currently coached cross country and golf at that particular time. So he wrote me back and offered me the job. So on the
that was in
68, 1968.
Good.
And so then I taught from 68 to 98. So I had a total of 36 years in teaching, 30 at Western Dubuque.
Okay.
So that's how I got here on the strength and the word of other people. And of course, Ralph Buckman was an outstanding guy.
Yep.
You know.
What was the original teaching assignment?
It was U.S. history, it was economics. I think those two.
Okay.
Those two. And when I, in that year in 68, I think they were adding the addition on the north side of the old gym.
Right.
And
that was the first addition after the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had to teach a class on the stage.
Okay.
So, if the chairs weren't set up, we'd set them up. And then we'd go into our classroom routine, and all of a sudden the basketball would come flying in from phys ed.
How many kids were in the class?
Oh, it was probably 30 or 35. It was a big class.
How many periods did you teach on the stage?
One or two. At this point in time, I can't remember. And boy, was I glad to get in that new addition and back there. And I think that probably was probably there for a quarter of the school year.
And then it was ready to go.
Yeah, and then it was, you know, they were doing the finishing touches. But, oh, brother. You know, when everybody's yelling and screaming on the other side of the curtain, it's just impossible. But, you know.
Good thing they weren't setting up for a play.
Well, you just, you know, kind of an emergency situation, just adapted. And boy, when we got into Mike Coffey and I, when we got into that north section there, oh boy, that was the Taj Mahal.
So you and Mike were the social studies?
Paul Vossen.
Okay.
Paul Vossen taught from probably 68 to around 75 or 76.
Okay.
Paul was farming at the same time and yeah. teaching half time. Swell fellow.
Yeah, I know Paul.
I mean, oh wow. A peach of a guy. And then, so it was essentially Paul and I for most of the U.S. history, and then Mike got a class or two, and then Paul retired from teaching.
Okay.
Because his farming enterprise was, it needed him.
What about the government classes? Who did that?
Oh, Wayne Thurm did the government.
Okay.
Yeah, Wayne Thurm. And then Paul Schramm. And I might have had a class in there because in those days you taught all kinds of things.
Right. Okay. So that was, that brought you into the early 70s.
Yeah.
And continued on from there. What about, I was just talking to other people about their... like transporting themselves back and forth to school. Did you come out with different people?
We had a carpool. Rather surprisingly, there were about four of us in the same block in Dubuque.
Okay.
Cleet Yanikowski in math, Linda Olson in English, Joanne Becker in business, Julie Norby, Carolyn Reif. We all at one time or another... carpool. Some of us lasted for 30 years. You know.
Okay.
In this.
Lots of conversations
carpool.
Went on. In those
you know.
Cars.
Oh my Lord. We're going down the highway. We're coming home, and there was a Volkswagen coming at us. All of a sudden, one of the wheels of the Volkswagen comes off, and as it happened. It got ahead of the Volkswagen and into the ditch. And this Volkswagen is on three wheels, mind you. And the guy just pulls over just as like nothing to it. God. As a matter of fact, Cleet Yanikowski had a little Volkswagen and at one point in time there were four of us. In that little Volkswagen. Oh, man. We'd pass a cattle truck. The livestock would relieve themselves. And I mean, we had some times. Yeah,
I remember,
that was good.
I remember one. This is before the four lane.
Yeah.
And one... spring, Jill was playing softball, practicing, and so I got done, and she was ready to go home. So we took off from the parking lot going to Piazza. It was a warm day, and we got behind a livestock rendering truck with dead animals. And I'm telling you, the smell was so bad that we had to pull off at Piazza.
Take a break and get some fresh air.
I can't believe people actually do that kind of thing. But
boy, and that highway got so busy toward the end there when NICC was going good. Oh, boy.
What about your starting salary? Remember where you started? Or?
Well, I remember in Pueblo, I made $4,800 a year.
Okay.
And I think after 6 years there, and I came back to Western Dubuque, I think I was in the 7,000 range.
Yeah.
And maybe early 8,000 because I had a master's degree by that time. And I think by the time I finished after 30 years at Western Dubuque, I think I broke 40 with everything added on that I could possibly add on.
Did you start coaching golf?
I started coaching golf, and I coached golf for 18 years, and then Jim Noonan took over.
Okay.
In golf, and I coached. Tom Kilberg had the girls.
Tom just retired. From
yeah.
The girls last spring. He said that was his 46th.
Yeah.
Year.
Yeah. And
girls.
And you know Tom, the wrestling coach. There'd be a tree out there, and aggressive Tom. It'd be in the way, and I'd say, Tom, it's 90% air. And he'd take a whack at the ball, take a whack at the ball and tear a couple of limbs off. We did have fun, both of us coaching.
Again, you must have had, traveling with kids back and forth, there must have been a lot of situations that,
oh boy,
situations that came up with.
Oh. In those early days, you know, Thunder Hill was maybe just beginning, but we didn't have high school kids from Thunder Hills at that point in time. So we just had kids that would pick up the golf club, and as a matter of fact, I know there was one young man, and we went to a meet, I think it was in Maquoketa, and I said, do you see the guy in the red sweatshirt? I said, that's the guy you follow. Don't come in until he comes in.
Okay.
Because, you know, they would shoot 60, 70 for nine holes.
Sure.
You know. And then some of the kids from Dyersville and Thunder Hills started getting on the golf team, and then they became very competitive, very good.
You know, we can't pass this area of discussion without you relating the Leighton Hill story. That has to be brought up at this point.
Oh. My memory could fail me on this. We're playing in a golf event. I think it was Maquoketa or DeWitt down in there. It was a coaches conference. And I took a break for lunch, had a couple of beers, went out on the 10th tee. I had previously found a ball in the rough, and it had a guy's name, Leighton Hall, on it. And got on the 10th tee, and some of these guys are razzing me, what kind of ball are you hitting, Delury? What kind of ball? And I looked at the ball, and I said, it's Leighton Hall. And this guy, Leighton Hall, steps out of the crowd, and he says, that's my ball. I lost it. I said, your ball, my ass, I'm hitting it.
Oh, my God.
At the event afterwards, you know, you get the door prizes. I walked up, and I drew Leighton Hall's name and gave him a dozen golf balls.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, that was funny. That was funny. I did have an injury on the golf team, rather surprisingly. You normally don't face those. But down at Fillmore, we were playing I don't know who, and one of our own guys put his putter over his shoulder and he hit Scott Harris in the head. And Scott Harris had to go to Cascade to get 7 stitches. Came back and was medalist for the meet. Yeah.
Well, I see Scott. I got to ask him about that.
And Scott would, he'd play golf, be the medalist. He was a heck of an athlete, as we all know. And he'd come back, change into his baseball uniform, and they'd put him on the team there.
Yeah.
Boy, he was outstanding.
Yeah.
Tim Eliason, Brad Brown. Kevin Kane, all those guys were really
good. Yeah, I remember Kevin
really
Kane.
Really good. We had a lot of fun.
Well, okay, so now I'm just chronologically, we're going along here
right.
In the early 70s. And I believe at that time, the Iowa became, through the legislative process, collective bargaining.
Yeah.
Came on the scene.
Yeah, that I think was passed around 1975 by the legislature. then I think we were public employees were eligible to bargain, and they could start that process in 76. So we started at Western Dubuque. I was president of the Western Dubuque Education Association. We started that bargaining process in 76, which lapped over into 77, which set up the contract for 77-78.
77-78, okay.
Yeah.
I've talked to Dave Wegman about this, and his memory, too, about this time period. I mean, he remembered all of the meetings leading up to the actual table.
Yeah, yeah.
He said they were, like, endless.
It's interesting that in this role as negotiators, you are sort of adversarial. It's like a team playing against a team, and then afterwards you're good friends and buddies and play golf together. So at the same time we're adversarial, we're good friends, and that's important to keep that, because if you get personalities involved, you will sink the negotiating process.
Yeah,
and it will go on forever. And I think Caterpillar Tractor did this one time, that they just never reached an agreement.
Wow. You know? Yeah.
So I have to tell the story about Dave Wegman, and as far as I know, he has used that practically up to this day. And that is the story, that we can't increase the money here because we have this old boiler that is bound to go out. And it will take us, it'll be $60,000 to replace this boiler. So we can't afford this particular feature of the contract. And if it was a boiler at Western Dubuque, that would work one year. Then it'd be the boiler down at Aquin, and then it'd be the boiler at Corton Camp. Just kept moving around.
Okay.
But it was a very interesting process. And we had help from the Iowa State Education Association, Clewis Walden. And the legislature laid out what you could bargain and what you couldn't. And the school district, they were literally as green as we were in this process. You know, they would insist on management rights, hire, fire, that kind of thing. And then we could say, okay, if you're going to fire someone, then this is the process that you should use to do so. Give the guy or person a chance to improve, observe them, that sort of thing. So besides just negotiating salaries and that sort of thing, a lot of process was negotiated.
So that, I suppose then, once you got rolling after the first year, it was easier.
Much easier.
But had to be a milestone for the teaching staff as far as
it was
being able to have some way of negotiating, whereas before it was just we'll give you whatever.
Right. And I was president when we didn't have the law, and then I was president when we did have the law.
Yeah.
And there's a world of difference there. Of course, you are before the law. You are asking because you have no power to do anything other than that. And after the law, you are still asking and trying to prove that what you want is justified and affordable. But there is a process, a mediation and fact finding, and ultimately arbitration, if you chose to go that far, to solve the differences. Iowa does not have a strike law, which I think is really good for public employees.
Do you have kind of a general idea, you know, what the district reserves were as far as what they could afford?
What, at that point in time, the state of Iowa would contributed somewhere around 46% to 48% of the school district's budget. Possibly it might have at times been slightly over 50%. And then the rest of it was raised from property taxes.
Right.
And districts, if they're forward-looking, always have an unspent balance.
Sure.
For unforeseen circumstances and construction here or there, with the, at the same time being mindful of the property taxes for the district and how far can you raise those property taxes, if at all.
That was the, you know, that period of time I would have thought would have been challenging for the district with the purchase of Cascade Aqua.
Yeah.
Adding another high school.
Yeah.
Which is still, I think, for a rural district in Iowa, I think that's unique. I don't think there's another one that has two high schools.
And of course, the busing expenses.
You
know, at one point in time, somebody told me 10,000 miles a day. We had 120 buses or something like that.
At the height of the transportation.
Yeah.
With we got into the parochial transportation. That really added on to the.
So we truly have a unique district,
from
different standpoints, and negotiating was very interesting because you have to understand the other side and the other position.
Right. How many years did you do the negotiating?
Well, then I did it before we had the law, and then the 1 year after the law, and then people like, I think, Carl Heing did it for a number of years. Then Jerry Ross came in and did it. Lois Tyson did it in there, and there was sort of a cadre of people that kind of followed up. And after the that first year, then all you're doing is, okay, what did not work? What needs to be addressed in procedural matters and other things? And then negotiating the salaries and that kind of thing. But some of the procedural things were some of the more difficult ones.
Yeah, I would imagine. Wayne was mentioning last week about when Lois was doing it.
Yeah.
He said they had some of the most vicious back and forth arguments.
Yeah, yeah.
He said he'd see her the next day in the hallway and say, "Oh, how are you doing?"
Exactly, exactly, exactly. You know, Ralph Buckman would sit in on those negotiating things, and it was disturbing to Ralph that that this was happening. It was kind of at the end of his career, you know.
And that was the straw that
I remember there was the issue of teachers working ball games and scores table and timing and just crowd control kind of thing, and ultimately the law said that, you know, we could bargain those kinds of things. And I think it came down that it could not be required of teachers to do so. They could still continue to volunteer, which is what happened.
Yeah.
But initially, I think Ralph perceived that as, oh my gosh, what am I going to do?
How am I going to pay for this?
For these basketball games, you know. And it all worked out. Boy, at the table, Ralph would be very upset, but then the next day we'd be in the hall and just like normal.
Yeah.
Now, around that time, switching subjects, around that time, we organized the Western trip.
Okay, yeah.
Which began around that 76-77 time period too. And
how did that
Mike Coffey and myself and Don Scheel we vacationed in Colorado frequently. I, of course, taught out there. Don Scheel went to school out there. And Mike went camping out there all the time. So we're just chatting, and we said, you know, it's too bad our students don't get a chance to see Colorado. I mean, it's a beautiful state, and all kinds of history is out that way. And so I found somebody, I think, that would write or help us write a grant and ask the federal government for some funds to transport the students out there. And it was not a vacation in the sense that they didn't have schoolwork to do, because we required that they had schoolwork to do, history and science, including biology. And the federal government, I think, gave us $6,000
to start out with.
And we took 40 people, I think somewhere around 35 of them or so were students from Beckman and Western Dubuque and Cascade. And we went out through Nebraska and a little bit in Wyoming and Colorado, and seeing museums and historical sites. And that went on for 25 years.
What did you do for vehicles?
Suburbans.
Was that the way it started?
That's the way it started, with Suburbans.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of those had a lot of miles on them. We weren't too sure we were ever going to get back. it was a great opportunity for kids, let's say, from a dairy farm or someplace that, you know, they're labor intensive and they're always home. They have to be home.
Yeah.
And
never been any place before.
Never been any place. And that was the criteria. Initially, that was the criteria, that they hadn't been on vacations. They hadn't seen, quote, the rest of the country. And then we pick from that group.
Probably over the years, probably inspired some marriages.
It did. It actually did.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah, it did. Now I can't remember exactly, but who it was. But I think somewhere around three couples got going. A shared experience, and from there they started dating.
What was the duration of the trip
time? It was about 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
I remember invariably, I don't remember exactly when that, I have a memory of it, but when you guys were on that trip in Colorado and you had the bus radios in the Suburbans, and the atmospheric conditions all of a sudden would open up, and we could hear you people.
Oh, is that right? Oh, wow.
Did you ever know that?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah, we could hear you in the office.
Oh, great.
Back and forth. And it would probably last for an hour or so.
Yeah.
During the day, and it was always kind of entertaining. We were looking forward to
to see what was going on. I know one time we got up in Cripple Creek, Colorado, big gold mining town. We went down in the into the gold mine, and one of the girls got sick. Debbie Stoffel.
I remember.
And we got up there at Cripple Creek, and it was probably altitude sickness. It started running a fever and that kind of thing. Well, there's no doctor in Cripple Creek. I don't even think there's a nurse in Cripple Creek. And so I said to the other girls, I said, we got somehow or other got her temperature and where it was and so on. And so I said, well, why don't you girls put her in the bathtub in kind of cool but not cold water and see if we can deal with this temperature. If it gets to this amount, we will have to get into Colorado Springs. And well, it calmed down, and But for a time there, I thought, holy cow.
Yeah. So she came out of it okay.
She came out fine. And there were no accidents for 25 years. There was nothing serious, you know, that occurred. And Louis Fouch and Larry Pizarik from Cascade, they went on a lot of them. Louis went on a lot of them. Louis provided the music and just generally entertainment.
Louis still doing the entertainment in Dubuque's name.
Yeah, he's he and his group play, but he likewise does something on one of the trolleys.
Yes.
Gives kind of the history of Dubuque on the trolley.
And I think he does kind of many concerts.
At the coffee houses and places like that.
Exactly. I've not had the opportunity to to hear him. I'd like to do it sometime.
Good musician. Nice guy.
Yeah. Any other memories of this, of anecdotal things that you remember from the classroom? Or I always remember you were such a gifted teacher, and you had things always planned out and under control. And every so often there'd be a challenging student for one reason or another, and you'd tell me ahead of time that this person might be coming to the office.
Exactly. I could kind of anticipate that this wasn't going to work out, and I would go down to you, and I would say, this young man is he's refusing to do this or that, and I'd say, he'll probably be down to see you second period, and this is what I'd like you to
accomplish.
And so he'd come down to you, and
it would work every time.
And, you know, these kids would wonder, how does he know I'm coming?
I stopped in to the high school a couple weeks ago. You know, some things, everything's different, but sometimes some things never change. Mm-hmm. I drove in the driveway, and I looked to my right, and if you remember, that first row in the parking lot was always pickups.
Yeah.
One solid, there they were.
Yeah. The same?
The same. They're all pickups. It was just unbelievable. You know, and so on. But other than that, have you been out to the high school?
Out there just driving around and looking at the construction and seeing what's happened. I got to get inside and see the theater.
You should go in and see the theater.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. There was a picture in the paper on it, you know.
808 seats.
Wow. That's really, I mean, that's top notch.
And he took us, Dave Hager took us back behind the curtains and the back area there. They've got a separate room just for set preparation. Constructing.
I looked on the plans. I've looked at all those plans, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is, you know, this is for this unit, this unit. Oh, it's,
there's a huge overhead door that you can back in and bring in properties and materials. I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, they certainly deserve that. They put on some fantastic programs.
And then there's the, up to the north, there's the choir room.
Yeah,
And the band room.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have been working on getting a commemorative plaque for Phil.
Yeah.
Put in the band room.
Yeah.
With this picture on it. Yeah. Dan Danner's doing it through the student council.
Okay.
Phil was, a legend.
Yeah. And, the wrestling room sharing time with the band room. And at times with the chorus room. And, all of that. Everybody bending and cooperating with everybody else to get the job done.
Well, you know, I mean, all kinds of ways, but once we decided to do the parent-teacher conferences in the gym,
yes,
which is the right way to do it.
Yeah.
But what had happened was because that was always when basketball practice started.
Yeah.
And so we'd have a session, parent-teacher session in the gym, and it was finished up in the evening at 9 o'clock or whatever, and then we'd have to take those tables
and
chairs all down.
Yeah.
Put them away.
Put them in those rolling stacks.
Push them under the stage. Same process the next day.
Yeah.
Year after year of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, wow.
Facilities was the biggest, one of the biggest challenges there.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah. And the endless portable classrooms.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had.
Do you remember the time when the deputy shot the was it a coon?
Yeah, raccoon. And it was before school started. And we got a call from one of the portables. There was some kind of animal out there, and I believe we must have called for Dan Reynolds, the marshal. He was also a bus driver. I don't remember if he was finishing his route or he showed up with his service pistol.
Yeah. Well, if that animal was rabid,
yeah,
and these kids are arriving, you don't have time to do anything else except to dispose of them.
Right. Which he did.
And nobody is around, so there's injury is pretty minimum.
Except that the shots that ricocheted off of the blacktop went into the portal walls.
Well,
Al, he just...
Oh, I didn't know he was in there.
So, Al has gotten mileage out of that story.
Oh, I bet he has.
For 25 years, probably.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, there is a story. I had a student... And he probably milked the cows right before he came into class. And didn't change his boots. You know, and the kids that sat around him, they would say, "Mr. Glory, is there anything you can do about this?" And so one time he came in and, oh, that was really bad. And so I said, "Would you go down to the restroom, wash off your boots and come back, maybe leave them outside the door?"
Okay.
And you know, the young man was such a nice fellow. He went, he did that, and he came back, and he even left them outside the door to dry. Fine. That's what was nice about teaching a Western Dubuque. The kids, in my experience, were always very respectful.
Yep.
And if you treated them fairly, consistently, justly, they were respectful of you.
Yes.
They knew if they had done something wrong, and I'm sure you more than many right there in the office, if you treated them fairly, consistently, justly, they were fine.
Yeah, you know, and the thing that happened, unfortunately, was that society and our culture has been evolving and eroding some of the parental values, and,
yes,
and the parental family unit has been pulled apart in many cases, and unfortunately that you find that happening, causing issues, you know, when kids challenge authority and the parents don't back the
school. That's right. That's right.
You know, then it's harder to achieve whatever. And
now Bernard Forkenbrock.
Yes.
He used to have the classic line: if some kid got out of line in class, his classic line was, "Do you want me to call your folks?"
Yeah.
Because at that time, that's all Bernard would really need to do.
That's all it took.
And of course, you know the story of Bernard and the smoking jacket.
Go ahead and tell that one.
because I was privileged to be right by his side at this point. I'm doing hall monitor. And Bernard comes up to me. He says, Dave, he says, do you smell smoke? And I, yes, Bernard, I smell smoke. He says, well, come on, let's go down here, down this hall, and see if it gets any stronger. And we go down more toward the front entrance. He says, now, do we smell it down? Yeah, Bernard, I smell smoke down here. And he reaches into his pocket at that point in time, and he had his pipe in there.
Okay.
And his pipe was hot enough that it started his jacket on fire. Not really on fire, but the pocket lining smoldering. So, yeah.
That reminds me of the Andy Griffith show when they had, of course, Barney was, the main attraction, and he got into the choir, but he unfortunately had no ability to carry a tune, and so every time they try to rehearse, there was this awful sound, and the director stopped, and Barney came over and said, I'll get over here and I'll listen to see. I can detect who that is.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, Bernard, that's the story about Bernard, which is famous or infamous throughout the whole district. I went to a meeting in New Vienna, and I just started the story, and practically everybody there could finish it.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, there was, lots of great memories, and lots of all the kids that came through our high school over the years, and they have. That's what I think is one of the neat things we can do with this website is that we can invite our alums to share their memories. Mm-hmm. And we can put them on a link to a website, and if the class of 76 has some memories,
sure,
it's right there.
Sure.
And
what's interesting in teaching these young people in high school is that sometimes at a particular point in time, school isn't for everybody, and they have a difficult time achieving. That does not mean that they are not going to achieve when they leave high school.
For sure.
And we have found, and you know of them, that initially might have had a difficult time through high school and have become outstanding citizens, leaders in their communities, mayors, whatever you want to choose. And so we as high school teachers and administrators have to kind of keep that in mind, that we do the best we can, and then wait for life to unfold.
Happens. I took my car over to Victory Ford in Dyersville last week, and because that's where we bought it. Anyway, I went in there, and they just completed a beautiful remodel to the whole thing, and I'm walking around, and over there in the corner is a big office, and that Larry Bierman is the sales manager. So he sees me, and of course he comes out. So we visit, and just different things. But turns out Larry's on the student or the city council in Epworth.
There we go.
He's telling me about some of the issues that they have, and whatever. Yeah. And there's all kinds of those.
Yeah, that is most interesting. I know I had a student in a similar vein. He took the ACT test, and he did not do well. And he was a good student, very conscientious student. I knew this young fellow was going to be successful one way or another. And he came into class and he said, "Mr. Lurie," he says, I did poorly on that ACT. I said, "Well, you can take it over again." I realized that. But I said, "Understand that test does not measure your perseverance and your overall intelligence and ability. It's just a test." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Any college would be happy to get a hold of you because you will be successful there." And as it would happen, I think he went down to Cornell,
okay,
or Grinnell, and became a successful individual after that. Finished school.
Yeah, I was last year. We were down in Florida, and it was in February, right at this time, in fact. And we're staying with Mike and Pat Cross. We lived up the street. Mm-hmm. Jennifer has moved mm-hmm. down there, and they moved down. And anyway, so Mike had gotten some tickets for the Daytona, not the 500, which is Sunday, but there's a race the Saturday before, which I have no interest in, but they wanted to go, so we went along to this race. Fortunately, we had some earplugs that you could...
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we walk in, we get to our seats, and... it's a beautiful day, and we're just sitting there. All of a sudden, this guy comes up. "Mr. Howard," he said, "how are you doing?" And he'd been sitting down with his family down there. Here was an Amman from Farley, and he lives in Minneapolis now. But he had his family down there, and he'd seen us come in.
I'll be darned.
So he wanted to say hi.
Yeah.
Anyway, we visited. So the following week, we're flying back, and so we get to Sanford Airport, and we're waiting in the check-in line, and I hear, "Mr. Howard."
That's really cool. That's nice.
This girl, and it turns out to be a Hollenbeck from Farley.
Oh, be darn.
Coming
be
back darn. With her husband.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You never know where you're going to run into whoever.
After Vietnam, we had some Vietnamese, Cambodian students. And I remember one young fellow, if I'm not mistaken, it was Dirith Ban.
Dirith Ban, that sounds familiar.
And he went actually through the killing fields of Cambodia.
Wow.
And he related to our class all the number of his relatives that were killed.
Yeah.
And he said some soldiers approached one time, and what was left of his family were trying to get out to Thailand. He said, "We hid in the ditch." And he said, as these soldiers came over, and he said, the guy cocked his machine gun. Standing right over us.
Yeah.
And for some reason, uncocked it and went on.
Jeez.
Now, Dirith Ban, if that is the correct name, he was constantly questioning me, always questioning me. And I said to the other students, I said, "Now, Dirith is going to be a very intelligent young man sometime because he's learning all the time. All the time he's asking and learning.
Yeah.
So he ended up finishing at Western Dubuque. I don't know where he went. He ended up working for Microsoft out in Seattle.
Wow.
And he came back to see me.
Is that right?
And stopped by my class. And he said...
When was that?
Oh, I don't...
Must have been in the 90s.
Yeah, I guess. And he said, "Microsoft has been very good to me." By that time, he was probably a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, coming from such an environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that? I mean, it's just where they must have been on an interview show or someplace recently that this person was being interviewed and was from another country and became a citizen and just was relating, you know, that if you have the the drive and the willpower.
Yeah.
This, you can make a success of yourself.
Yes.
In this country.
Yeah. I mean, this guy, I'm sure, didn't know any English at all.
Yeah.
And it ends up.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Mm. So it was a very interesting career. I loved it.
Yeah.
I just absolutely loved it.
It seemed like, and I too, it seemed like every day was different.
Yep.
And you never knew what was going to come through the door. But
you're dealing with people, and every day people are a little different. Something new happens all the time. You'd think it would be rather routine-ish, but that's not the case.
I was thinking the other day about the time that we had the Halloween dance. And it was unfortunately, it was a costume affair. And Harold and I were chaperoning the dance. There's a couple guys from Farley that came in, and everybody had to pay, so they paid. And they both had trench coats on. And so, you know, we're just, people are dancing, and having a good time. All of a sudden, it was a Pauly kid in a rave. Ron Pauly, I think. Anyway, these guys are going around, and all of a sudden, we see them, they get up to the top of the bleachers, and at some point, they open their trench coats, and they had gotten ladies' stockings, and they had stuffed them with some kind of material, so and wrapped them around their waist. So when they opened their trench coats, they had this hanging down. And Harold spotted them. And he goes moving over there, and they see him. And they take off, and they go to that east door. Go in the hallway, and they get out the hallway, and Harold's right behind me. I'm on this end, or by my office door.
Yeah.
And they start to run. All of a sudden, Harold tackles one of them. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah.
Man, he just tackled him. Down he went.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible.
Yeah, you never died.
Yeah.
Remember Twyla Horner?
I remember the name, yes.
Quince DeGale.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one night there was a ball game. I think it was a guy's game. And I don't know what happened, but after the game, people are leaving, and all of a sudden there's an activity. And here, Twyla got into a confrontation with this Martin girl, I think it's Nicole Martin. They were on the ground, just
going back, at one another,
struggling back and forth.
Oh, geez.
So anyway, it was like I said, you never knew what was going to come in the next door.
No,
see what the situation might have been, but lots of fun. So anyway, I was going to say, because I interviewed Wig last one. He thought negotiations commenced in the early 80s, but that's obviously not the case. You have a very clear timeline on that. And I thought that was not correct. But
yeah. So 77-78 is the... as I recall, the first contract, because the state passed it about 75, said it could, you could start in 76, and for all I know, we started in 76 and had endless meetings going on into the spring of 77, because you had to have stuff wrapped up so school districts could lay out their budgets and submit their budgets by a particular timeline.
Yeah.
There was a timeline involved.
Okay.
And whereas budgets have to be submitted and teacher contracts have to go out too.
Right.
By that particular time.
Right.
And now, there were a few instances where I know there was an instance where there was something went to arbitration, and I think it was a personnel issue of some sort.
Okay.
And I remember attending a
binding arbitration,
yeah, on a particular issue.
Just going to show you. I have, you know, what I've done over research, whatever. But those are the things that I've come up with as far as the milestones, way,
yeah,
what I call them.
Yeah. Yeah, I would put 77, 78 as the contract, first contract year.
Okay.
And the people in Dubuque would probably do the same thing. Joe Tolari was on the negotiating committee in there in Dubuque.
That law, that number one, the law, apparently that... The discussion on that law started in the mid-50s with the legislature, and that law was passed, I think, in 57.
Okay.
And it stated that every area had to be incorporated by 62.
Okay.
With no fewer than 300 students, and that's the reason West Dubuque is so big.
Okay.
Because Wayne had to get
300
students in order to get a viable district.
And when you stop and think about the difficulty that our students had in coming from North Buena Vista and getting on a bus.
Sand Springs down to Monticello.
And literally riding for an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes to get to school.
Yeah.
Go to school, ride that distance home, do chores, do homework, come back again.
Then if they're involved in activities or athletics.
Yeah, yeah.
Hard to imagine.
Boy.
At any rate, okay. That's